Why Does This Thing Exist?
Podcast.
Why Does This Thing Exist? Podcast.
Good morning, friends.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
any bullshit you want to say before I say what I say every week, Dean?
No, I'm going to keep the bullshit for later on. I'm going to spread the shit nice and evenly today.
Thank you very much. What are you going to show me this week, Dean?
Well, this week on our podcast that we do, Simon.
Yes.
Okay.
Carry on.
Yeah, so the thing I'm going to bring to the table this week on Why Does This Thing Exist podcast, where we show each other things and try to understand why they exist. Simon, are you familiar with the cult 90s sitcom Seinfeld?
Oh, yes, of course. It's one of my favourite things ever.
Yes, I was being
facetious. As you well know.
Yes. This is, I like Seinfeld. I enjoy it when it's on. But Simon is owns all the box sets sort of fan. So, you've always been a bigger champion of Seinfeld than I am. So I'm assuming, based on your very unashamed appreciation for the show, yep, that you would like to see the best Seinfeld scene ever.
Sure, yeah.
I bet you would. It's on YouTube, you see.
Okay.
I'm going to show it to you now. According to this, you uploaded 16 years ago, 2.4 million views. Of course, it's the best Seinfeld scene ever. So I want you to explain to me afterwards why it is the best one, okay?
Well, I wouldn't hear of it. I said, nice try, Granny, and I sent it to the back of the line.
It's me and his friends in the frozen yogurt shop. A classic episode, I believe.
Hello, Newman.
Hey, this yogurt is really something, huh? And it's non-fat! I've been waiting for something like this my whole life, and it's finally here!
Hey, Seinfeld.
Hey, friends.
I'd appreciate if you stopped using obscenities around my son, huh? It was an accident. I'm going to talk to him.
I'll have a small plain vanilla in a cup to go. That's right. Non-fat, right?
That's right.
Because I'm on a special diet, and the doctor said I can't have any fat.
I mean, at this point, it's just us watching Seinfeld.
Strawberry for me and my friends!
All right.
Well, so, yeah. Basically, that's the best Seinfeld scene ever. I'm not as big a fan of you, and I'm wondering what I'm missing, basically.
I don't like that at all. Because right. Seinfeld... Well, now is different. Mm. It's on Netflix, I think, now.
Yes, I think it is. Yeah. It's popped up on my recommendations a lot, yeah.
But there was a period, and it probably would have been about 16 years ago, when Seinfeld was harder to find, which is why they bought the box sets, because it wasn't on every day, or you couldn't get it every day.
Yeah.
And so for someone who heard about it, and heard it's an American great, to put in best scene ever, well... That must be it. I'll watch that then.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
It's clearly not, is it?
Well, yeah, because I think I looked this up years ago. I mean, you were always sort of telling me how good it was, and what I saw was really good, but I only came in it quite late, so I saw the last couple of series, which I've been told repeatedly are not the strongest ones. They're fine, but they're not, they got quite cartoony at that point. So I thought, I want to see some of the better stuff. So I went back on YouTube, it's like, oh, it's on YouTube, maybe. So I put in best Seinfeld scene, or like the best one, so see like what the highlights were. So I see what ones I missed, and this is what came up. I'm thinking, okay. So I don't know, maybe it's an American thing, maybe there's something I'm not seeing. So yeah, so it's not something I'm missing here. It's not something like, there's no obvious joke.
No, it even includes something which, if I didn't know any better, it would have put me off instantly, is when... There's very few catchphrases in Seinfeld, really.
Mm.
There's lines and bits that have sort of become popular because of the show, I guess, in a way. Yeah. But when Jerry says, hello, Newman, he says it in a withering way.
Yes.
He always used to do whenever Newman would pop up.
Yes, that was one of the very few. That was a catchphrase, isn't it, essentially?
Yeah.
Well, not really, but yes, the closer they got.
And then the audience sort of like laugh and applaud because they recognize it.
Mm.
And that's the sort of thing that I, at the time, would have hated about American sitcoms. They don't happen now so much, I think, because times have changed. But
yeah, you don't get so much what a multi-studio sitcom nowadays, from all single camera stuff. So just, you know, it's more organic and natural more often than not. But
but that would have put me off. So that's one mark down why it's not the best scene ever.
Yeah.
Although I guess the rest of the marks come from is like just a midpoint scene in one episode, which probably isn't the best episode. And
that's what I assumed it
doesn't
was.
Doesn't really build or do anything else with it.
I feel this episode is sort of famous for other reasons in that it was, because it was at the time when frozen yogurt became a big thing in America and people were into it because they were marketing it as a low-fat option, alternative ice cream. And it's not. Like, I think Seinfeld was like, flagged that was a joke. They said, imagine if it wasn't low fat, it was just like a lie. And that turned out to be true or something.
Yeah, okay. I can believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, that's the side issue to claiming it's the best Seinfeld scene ever. Because it doesn't even do that. It just says, it shows a little bit of scorn. It throws a bit of doubt on the whole fat free concept of frozen yogurts. Again, that's not really the most memorable part of Seinfeld, if I'm not mistaken.
It wasn't that yogurt-based as a show.
This might be the only yogurt episode. again, I haven't seen them all. I could be wrong about that.
What does the uploader say about why this is? Do they mention why this is the best in any way?
Best thing ever.
That's all it says is best thing ever.
The closest I could find, when I looked through the comments, it's like a lot of people are saying it's Newman's performance they really like Newman's performance, Newman's gluttonous laugh, Newman's evil cattle.
But he does that every time he's in the show.
Yeah, I've seen that in every episode I've seen him in.
Yeah.
And he does it better, I think, in other episodes.
I don't think so, yeah. The bit where he has to eat the broccoli in a later episode, that's quite good.
He calls it foul weed.
Yeah.
That's one of my favourite scenes.
There's a bit where he touches the hem of a woman's jacket at a post box and she attacks him, and then her boyfriend turns up and attacks him and he runs away. That's quite good.
Yeah. No, everyone in the comments is defending Newman's performance.
I think it's because these people in the comments, they've sort of been sucked in and they feel like they need to affirm that this is the best clip of the show for some reason.
I feel like this is an element of, I've seen it and you haven't. You know, like, I'm in on something and you're not. And I think there's that. But that's, you know, it's all very pro-Newman, which really is a good character. He's a good performance. Not just any, but this isn't like a barnstorming example of Newman's comedy chops. It's
literally a scene that connects two scenes in the episode for story purposes.
It's a joining scene, isn't it? It's a dialogue bit, essentially. It's like a cut scene in a video game.
I want to investigate the uploader more, Dean. Click on and see what else he's doing.
Well, the name is Russ Hates You, so that's obviously maybe he actually is some trolling everyone.
Yeah, he's a trickster. Which
would have been at the time. Uploads. So five videos.
Five videos.
Oh, one is a grime type band plays to offensive word
weird.
For
skinhead shorts marsh.
Poison Idea, typical.
Yeah, typical. Poison Idea might be a band, I guess. Interesting.
So it seemed like the Seinfeld thing was the first thing he uploaded and got 2.4 million views. And to capitalize on that, he went so weirdly abstract. I don't understand what this is. Favorites, maybe there's a...
Let's see, what's his favorites? How to Grow Out a Fringe.
Oh, this is a very sort of gender non-specific mix of stuff.
Yeah. A couple of Ric Flair videos. a video about somebody making a sex doll.
Yeah, that's what that is.
Some more Ric Flair videos.
What a weird individual. A lot of Ric Flair.
Loads of Ric Flair.
How to Protect Your Girlfriend? Jesus Christ.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know, like when I told you before, like when I've done my Google searches for something I'm writing, which has got so many different weird bits of tangent and stuff, and my algorithms start throwing up absolute gibberish because I've just confused them. This is like that. It said like he mentioned Ric Flair in passing once. I'm guessing that's a hobby of his. So he seems insecure. Let's give him some weight building videos.
We got some workout stuff, the Ric Flair stuff. What seems to be a sex video, and then these two videos are quite interesting. Video one is how to grow out a fringe and not lose your mind.
Yeah.
And then the next video is how I hide my full fringe.
I get mixed messages.
Yeah. He's a very interesting person, Russ, I think. Yeah.
Well, he hates you, that's all we know about it.
Well, he hates me and he hates his fringe and or loves it, who knows?
Yeah. We know he loves Ric Flair.
Say that for certain.
Who doesn't, though?
Who doesn't, yeah.
So back to the original Seinfeld video. Yeah, I mean, 2 million people plus have watched this, unless it's Russ just watched it on a loop over and over again for 16 years.
Do you think Russ has seen any like monetization from this video?
I don't see how, because he doesn't have anything, no links to sites and stuff. And
we don't know how YouTube works. If you've got 2.4 million views, do they give you any money?
I think if you have to have a sort of account, I think that's a subscriber thing. And he's got how many subscribers? 76 subscribers. Shall I subscribe? See what happens.
Yes, please. Yeah.
The bell rang a little bit. That's nice. But I don't think that really answers any questions.
Hey, have you seen, Dean, going off a little bit of a tangent?
No.
It was the first example of AI technology that I saw where there was AI-generated Seinfeld. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, I'll find it out. He's going back a few years as well. I'm hoping it's still in existence. Bear with me. It was called Nothing Forever. And it was AI-generated episodes of Seinfeld.
Is it on YouTube or...?
Yeah, it was on Twitch, running 24/7.
Oh, Christ.
I'll see if it's still live. Bear with me.
Okay. That sounds pretty ominous. Especially because it started getting better over time.
I wonder if it did. When I watched it, it was really bizarre. Let's see if it's still going. Yeah, it's still working, Dean. Do you want to check in, see what's going on in Seinfeld now? In Seinfeld Forever?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, okay then.
Both. Or neither. Can an empty room have secrets?
It's a little bit strange, isn't it?
Oh. Are secrets still valuable if nobody cares about them?
Is it very pixelated? Was it always like that? Or
Actually, the graphics are better than they used to.
Depends on who's asking.
Pretty strange.
Well, okay, to protect the thing, nothing forever. It's a show about nothing forever. Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah. A goblin playing tricks.
Well, it seems like the thing which would inspire someone to make a Twin Peaks Seinfeld.
Yes.
What if someone saw this and then made, I know, I'll actually make a Twin Peaksy type version of a Seinfeld trailer. I would add that.
I'm not sure who these characters are meant to be. They don't look like any of the characters. Well, we're going to somebody's the cafe now, is it? Maybe this isn't Seinfeld and they've written
sometimes,
to the point.
I wonder if we're just puppets in someone else's show. Like, you know the way a cake knows it is a cake because someone took the time to bake it.
Well, this is bizarre and awful. Let's stop looking at that.
We're just jumbled ingredients until someone or something decides we've been in the oven long enough.
Pipe down and get off my screen.
We're human.
Yeah.
So I've got to say, Dean, I'm ready to give my scores for this.
Okay. How would you go first this time? Because you're the Seinfeld aficionado.
I'm going to give it 0.5, Dean.
Yeah, I'm trying to give it a very, very low mark because I see no logic behind it. If anything, it's done Seinfeld a serious disservice by telling 2.811 million people that this is the best Seinfeld scene ever. And like I've seen it before. If I'd watched that first, I'd gone, not for me. So I'm going to give it a 0.5 as well.
I think you would have been right to do so. The only reason I can think it's worth a 0.5 is if someone watched that and thought, really, that's the best one? That's the best bit. I'm going to have to watch more just to be sure. But then they would have seen something actually funny, maybe.
Yes. Maybe it's almost a given that they would have seen something funnier than that because that was a very strange... But that scene wasn't meant to be especially funny, apart from Newman's stellar performance, by all accounts.
I think it could have just easily been somebody bloody causing a ruckus or something. taken a leaf out of Ric Flair's book and just gone, oh, I'm going to disrupt this. This little noise I went, woo.
And that guy's head, like, it's not Kramer, it's Ric Flair with a big fringe. And then, you know, that's what he wants. That's all he's ever wanted.
Or no fringe,
depending on the episode.
On the episode. Welcome back, Frizz friends.
Welcome back, Frisson. The spicy frisson between us. I enjoy it. Ah, good stuff.
Good stuff, Dean. Here we go, Dean. What we're going to show you now, listeners, is extreme haunted houses. Are you aware of this, Dean?
I am not. I mean, I've never heard the phrase extreme put before haunted houses before, so this is new. This is new.
It's not fun, and I will give a warning to the listeners who are not big fans of horrible things. Maybe skip about a quarter of an hour, because this is going to be horrible.
Good to know. Good to know. Thanks for the heads up.
What extreme haunted houses are, Dean, is basically, it's an American thing where you go to some idiot's house and he tortures you.
Oh, fuck's sake, really?
Yeah.
Because in my head, I thought, oh, it's like a haunted house on a tripwire across a cliff. No, that was more sensible.
Sadly not. The biggest extreme haunted house, the most famous, is something called McKinney Manor.
Right.
McKinney Manor, excuse me, if it is full due. It's fully deserving of it. I've got some facts for you about the place, but maybe I should show you a little video or something.
Please do. He says, with a certain degree of irony.
Here it comes.
Yeah, lovely.
The videos are long, but here's a little clip of a bit of it. Yes. You get the idea there, didn't you?
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so that's the thing.
So basically what it is, McKinney Manor is a place in Tennessee now. It's moved around a bit. Where
I bet, yeah. Keeps getting burnt down.
this man, he doesn't accept payment. You just got to pay him in dog food. I'm not sure why that is. I mean, maybe it's a legal thing. I'm not sure. But essentially, you go there and he tortures you. And they make you sign a waiver before you start.
Mm-hmm.
It includes things like having your head shaved, your fingers put in mouse traps, up to extracting teeth.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
They never used to have safe words, but they do now, apparently. A couple of people who have done it have said that they were essentially tortured. There's waterboarding involved.
Yeah, that's definitely.
Somebody says they were buried alive. It takes a lot of effort, really.
Yeah.
People being forced to eat their own vomit. Just people just being like beaten up as well.
Yeah, just being assaulted constantly. Yeah.
Just being assaulted. One woman said she went to the police afterwards because they were just assaulted. And that's sort of it for now.
Right. That was ominous for now. And I've booked two tickets. Investigative journalist. Okay.
So I guess I wanted to know, from like a psychological perspective maybe, why would this sort of thing appeal to people? It doesn't appeal to me.
No, not at all. I mean, there's a certain thrill-seeker personality type in that, you know, you need to have more and more sort of intense stimulation to feel the same sort of level of buzz that most people have with something far less significant. So those are things. And the adrenaline of risking yourself is a big part of that. So that's a known thing. But that only means, though, it's some things like sort of extreme sports. When we said extreme, I don't know, extreme sports is in the being injured and hurt is like, it's a consequence of what you're doing. It's not like the ultimate point if you don't do it, because that's not the part you're striving for. You're trying to avoid that part, but you accept that it's going to happen. So, yeah, I think this sort of like, I've thought of this in sort of a far less brutal context before of, was what they call torture porn genre of horror. Sure. That became a really big thing. I mean, I'm not a fan, but for a while there was all those just general brutal gore and gut stuff.
Yeah.
And I think sort of like there's a difference between horror and gore. You know, like I think people conflate the two, and you shouldn't. Mm. That's in one of my books, talking about Dr. Firth Gobbi here, about people sort of mix up horror. Like horror is like a combination of fear and disgust. So like the blood and guts thing is a big part of that.
Right.
But I think most people I know would agree that the scariest stuff is always the psychological stuff, you know, when like the not knowing all the low dread is always more unpleasant, the visceral, oh God, you know, whereas some people are into that, you know, it's very stimulating. But I've not heard of anyone actually volunteering to have it done to them as part of a tourist experience. That's new on me.
This place, it started out just being a thing you could do. And then apparently there's like a waiting list of like thousands of people to go there.
Mm.
And now he offers £20,000 if you can go through the whole duration of whatever he's got planned.
Yeah.
Nobody ever has. But yeah, initially people were just doing it just to do it.
I think there's going to be a strong element of machismo and ego will be part of it. Like, yeah, I can handle that. You know, I'm hard. Because a lot of stuff comes from that, like spicy food.
Yeah.
One of the main theories as to why that's a thing, because it is, you know, it's literally the sensation of pain in your food. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's like the whole sort of macho culture, like the early days of humans, like, yes, this is painful, but I can handle it. And it's sort of evolutionary thing to make us more, you know, resilient and stuff.
That's
one theory anyway. Mm. But yeah, I think there's a big difference between, yeah, I can eat this extra hot curry. And if you go to a restaurant, you know, this curry is super hot, but then the waiter just tackles you, starts rubbing chilies in your eyes.
Yeah,
I think that would be like, hang on now. I think that's sort of taking things a bit far.
Yeah, imagine going for a lovely romantic meal for two and you've got to sign a disclaimer that says you will have your teeth pulled.
Yeah.
Pretty much, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm guessing people sign up for it thinking this can't be that bad. He's not allowed for it to be that bad. And obviously it is that bad because it looked like it would be.
Yeah. This is another thing with it I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah.
So people afterwards have said that these horrific things have happened to them.
Hmm.
And the place itself states that these horrific things will happen to you.
Yeah.
But they're allowed to persist. And the guy that's running it, I guess his name is McKamey, I'm not sure.
Hmm.
There was a lot of kerfuffle and a lot of furore about what he was doing, essentially, you know, torturing people.
Yeah.
Doing horrific things. And he said that what he's doing is a form of hypnosis. He psychologically manipulates the people going there to a point where they are believing that these things are happening to them, where he wouldn't be allowed to do them because, you know, legally you're not allowed to torture people. But he puts them in such a mind state that they think they think something is happening beyond what is actually happening.
Right.
And he gives an example where, like, the people who said they were waterboarded out there were just in like a 6-inch pool of water and things like that.
Right.
Is that possible, do you think? This is another thing about it as well. I should explain that waiver that you signed at the start.
Yeah.
It's incredibly long and it lists so many horrific things. And like he makes you sit in a field and read it all, sign it all while he's shouting at you. Then he gets you to read it all back out loud. So, like, I think there is some kind of, like, psychological manipulation going on where he puts people into it, like a mindset where something bad's going to happen to them. And a lot of people drop out of that stage, apparently, before they even get into the house.
That's, I'm not going to say I approve of that. But
yeah, that's what I was going to say. Firstly, can you do that? And secondly, is that a good thing to be doing anyway?
It's better than not doing it. Is that a strange way of looking at it? If he's at least he's trying to filter out the people who would sort of be seriously traumatized by it. Not that people aren't, but, you know, if somebody is sort of like just doing it for a jolly and they don't have any sort of fortitude to withstand what he's doing, then this will hopefully filter them out ahead of time before they actually are deeply injured and psychologically scarred forever.
I think that might be a byproduct, though. I don't think he cares. I think
this guy,
step one of the process of traumatizing people.
I wonder if this is a calibration thing, as in, no, he sees like, okay, they handle this particularly well, they don't handle this well, so I know how far I can push it. I mean, I'm not going to...
Right.
It's not a similar thing, but I feel like my personal trainer does that to an extent. Obviously, he's got a lot of different people he trains, so I think you can tell when, like, yeah, he's about to go. So I'll just step back a bit. Like, if I push... I mean, he's not perfect at it, because I did drop a 25K dumbbell on my chest the other day, which he did really freak out about, to be honest.
Yeah, I imagine so.
And I said, oh, sorry, my bad. He goes... Because... My left shoulder was playing up, so I was like just concentrating on that. But I'm just neglecting the right hand, and then I just dropped it.
Big, I like that you apologised to the PT rather than sorry about that. I've almost really killed myself there.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'm not going to sue you. Well, maybe, I don't know.
Just, but, as well. My driving instructor used to push me as well, but he pushed it beyond the point, really, because I remember he was stressing me out to the point where I would just. Got out of the car. I almost did like a drop and roll. We were at the we were at the crossroads, and it was my turn to pull off, and I didn't. And the light was changing back to amber, and the car was in motion. I just got out, seatbelt off, and walked out of the car. And he was screaming, "Where are you going? Where are you going?" I'm off. Fuck this.
I know you said it was doing a driving lesson, but in my head, I heard test. It's going so badly. You just jettisoned yourself. Doing a maneuver.
I'll read a book online.
Going like 30 miles an hour through Fairwater. Tumble into the street. Oh, Christ. That was an image. No, but obviously that didn't happen. But. Was this guy in the military at all?
I think he was, yeah.
Yeah, because this actually, that part you mentioned sounds a lot like what them drill sergeants do.
Right.
It's just sort of the yelling. It sort of breaks you down psychologically. It sort of takes away your individuality, and sort of you become very submissive and really, I don't know, compliant, because you have to withstand someone just screaming in your face. And it puts you in a different mindset. And there is some research which links physics intense pain with an altered psychological state. Like, that's really, like, BDSM is researched a lot as a result of that, because while objectively I look at what the stuff they get up to, I'm thinking, that sounds horrific. I don't get why you do that voluntarily, but it does apparently put you in a totally different mental place. Yeah. Like throughout history, like, monks have been self-flagellating, you know, they beat themselves with and stuff, and that's part of that, to sort of achieve a higher state of, you know, being, is essentially. So there is a certain degree of that to it, I guess, but given how people differ all the time, I think the idea that you could do it to every single person reliably on to schedule does seem really far-fetched. I mean, also, how deep water do you need to be to waterboard someone? I don't think you need much, do you? It doesn't have to be.
No, I don't think so, no.
I think 6 inches ample, surely. Yeah, what you say, like, you can drown in a cup of water, mind.
Straight, yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure that's true, but apparently...
Teaspoon, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, but these sort of wild claims go, no one ever sort of stops and think, okay, can you elaborate? No.
Yeah. In what circumstance am I going to drown in a teaspoon of water?
Yeah. Like, swan can break an arm, mind to be, how?
Yeah.
No, is it beak, wing? Beak? how do they do it?
Imagine going to a haunted house run by a swan, Dean, frightening.
That would be terrifying. Yeah. That would actually Especially they don't tell you it's a swan. Yeah. You open the door like,
just a level teaspoon of water in this beak coming out there with a waver.
Oh, God. Why did I mock my friends who said this was going to happen? Did you ever go to the London Dungeon in London?
I think I have, actually. It's full of waxworks and that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but like, it's set up to be sort of like, you know, scary. Like, all the, but they, at least they did when I went. We're talking, Christ, pre-kids, you know, so it was like at least like 15, 16 years ago. My wife went, but they had actors who were sort of like doing all the dark bits of the corridors. They sort of jump out at you pretend to be the inmates and stuff. And I think it happened when I was there, but I think I feel like people say like some of the actors are like these blokes who was going to go and sort of grab you and stuff.
Yeah.
But a lot of them would only do it to the women.
Oh, no.
The small women. That's really creepy, isn't it? But then apparently there's quite a few cases of they do it to one of the blokes instead of just get punched straight in the face. With the women as well sometimes. It's sort of like, I think Ian Bolsworth, he's mentioned something, he does a lot of work on this, but with like those ghost tours and things like that, which this isn't really, but you know, it's haunted. Is there really any sort of concern for safeguarding, you know, when you're actively going out your way to scare people, to terrify them, and there's no sort of regulation of these things, so you know, you potentially are doing a lot of psychological damage to people for shits and giggles. But this guy seems like he must be a masochist, surely. No one who has any sort of concern for others would come up with this concept, surely.
Well, yeah, on that, there's one of the women that have complained about it since said that somehow he knew that she had cheated on her boyfriend at one point. And that was made a focus of the psychological torture she went as part of it. So it was like, that's the opposite of safeguarded, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. How would he know? Was it with him? I feel like, I know, like yelling in someone's face, like she just blurts out like, I wasn't faithful. What? Oh, right.
Please don't remove all my teeth.
Yeah, this is deeply upsetting.
It's upsetting, isn't it? Let's move on to the random Wikipedia article section.
What's that? Scores out of 5, 0. I can't really be seen to endorse this in any shape or form, but thank you for letting me know about it.
So it's not for me, listener. I wouldn't recommend it to you either.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 0 as well. I think there's something up with it. I don't trust it, you know?
I mean, it's not even subtle. It's overtly something dodgy. So, yes.
It's either actually is really horrible or it's some kind of horrible scam. Either way, not good.
Not good.
Welcome back, friends.
Welcome back.
For those of you that skipped that horrible section, here's a quick recap. Only joking, of course.
Here's a quick 15-minute recap.
Yeah. Nah, it's random Wikipedia article section, of course, everyone's favorite section.
Great stuff.
Here it comes, Dean and listener. 3, 2, 1, here we go. List of Coronation Street characters 2024.
Oh, well, there we are. Something a bit more on friendly ground.
Yeah.
For listeners who don't know, Coronation Street is a British soap opera, first broadcast on ITV, 9th December, 1960. Okay, still ongoing. I've never watched Coronation Street properly, but if it finished, I imagine that would be newsworthy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like probably the most newsworthy. It predates EastEnders by some margin, doesn't it?
24 years.
Yeah, that's a margin. That's a big margin.
Yep. It was in black and white when it started.
Oh. Before the coronation, ironically. It wasn't.
It couldn't have been.
That's really good guess. Coronation. What's it called that? I don't know. Just really like that chicken, you know?
It's like those eggs from the other week where they were like pre-election eggs.
What a concept. I will say, you just scrolled on the bottom of this article and I was surprised it was so short. Then I realised it's Harrison characters which have presumably been introduced in 2024?
Well, why not read the very next sentence of the article, Dean, and let it be explained to you?
Okay.
And the listener.
The following is a list of characters introduced in 2024 by order of first appearance. Okay, good.
Right.
So I was right about that then. But at first I thought it was going to be really long and be scrolling down for like weeks because they must have racked up quite a lot of
definitely. My characters
in 62 years, 64 years.
Yeah.
Nice. It's a long time for a TV show, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Anyway.
Do you watch or have you ever watched Coronation Street, Dean?
I have seen a few episodes.
Yeah?
My father was a fan of... Who was the character? I say.
Fred Elliott.
I was a big fan of him.
Yeah.
Yes. I know Reg Holdsworth, of course. I was very aware of the whole Free Deirdre campaign in the 90s, which was, in hindsight, laughable.
Yes.
Yes. I think that was a chilling sign of things to come.
Exactly, yeah.
But let's look at this article. How many characters have we got in this 2024? Obviously, we're still, at the time of recording, it's only March.
It's March. So this is a live list, really. This will be updated through the years. Now then, I want to say at this point that I occasionally, semi-regularly watch Coronation Street because my wife watches it. And I have to say, it's not bad.
No, people who watch it and they do enjoy it. They do find it rather entertaining.
It's quite funny at times, yeah.
Yes.
Quite witty. The characters are generally well written.
Mm.
Where it differs to EastEnders is you can dip out of Coronation Street. And when you dip back in, there'll be new storylines happening.
Mm.
But the characters remain the same.
Right. Okay.
They're grounded in a reality which exists in the show to some extent. Whereas if EastEnders, you could turn that off, watch it again in 6 months, the exact same storyline seems to be happening again, but the characters are all doing totally uncharacteristic to what they were doing 6 months ago.
Yeah, they do that a lot. The sitcom I remember most of it is actually Brookside.
Brookside was good.
My mother was a huge fan of that. I remember that got quite extreme quite late on. And I just remember like not getting into it because it's like I was just a big fan of sci-fi stuff. Like these are normal people. Why do I care about that?
So
there's that. But it maybe got quite dark a lot of the time, Mick from Brookside and stuff. And it's quite funny in places. But then
Jimmy Corkill was a good character.
Yeah, he was good. Ron Dixon, another good one.
Yeah, Ron.
Tinhead.
He was one of the later ones. You know all the characters.
He was one of the ones, I remember him vividly, because it was I can't remember the actor's name, but Ollie something, whatever he was.
Yeah.
But he was on, I think, the first series of that Sky TV show, The Games. They had celebrities and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but the first event was like diving.
Yeah.
Girls team and a boys team. Women's team, female team. And the female one was like took like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I think it was Kirsty Allsop one. She's really quite fit.
She's a sportswoman, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But then that guy plays Tinhead and he's like a brick shit house. He's an actual athlete.
Kirsty Gallagher, I was thinking of. Kirsty Gallagher. Yeah.
I think you're right, yeah. But he's up against Craig Charles. It's like, whatever you think of Craig Charles, you'd be a big fan of it. He's not a prime physical specimen.
No.
This guy looked like looked like Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah. But like Lancelot David.
Yeah, you looked exactly like that. This isn't fair. This is literally a contest of physical capability.
Let's have a look at these characters, Dean. So the list is so far.
Because Craig Charles is in Coronation Street now, isn't
he? He had a good character in that too. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, so Emily Wilkinson.
Emily Wilkinson. She's a mystery woman who knows Joel Deering.
Mm. I don't know who
Joel Deering is. No, let me have a look at him, see if I can take a picture of him. No, there's no. So that's the first person, the new character of the year. And she arrived on the 9th of February. So January didn't have any new characters.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But it's New Year. You've got to sort of give everyone a break, haven't you? Give it a rest.
Yeah, that's right. So the second character of the year is somebody called John Perry, and he was played or is played by a former Peaky Blinders actor called Ian Peck.
Okay.
This is by the by, Dean. When was the last time you had Peck, as in the canned meat?
Good God. I haven't even thought about that for like 25 years. So over 25 years ago,
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever had it. I mean,
I remember it from our youth because our friend Matthew, his mother was a big fan of a Peck sandwich.
yeah. Peck meat. I remember my grand saying that a lot.
Peck, yeah, Peck.
Yeah. I think I remember I had a sandwich once, a lot of that jelly on it, and I didn't like that. So
Yes, it's from a tin, so we will have that on it. Yeah, same with spam and corned beef. You've got to scrape that off with a knife listener.
But corned beef has the white sort of, I don't know,
Extra fat, that is, yeah.
yeah, but it feels like a friendlier fat. It's not a
Yeah,
sort
it
of,
does, doesn't
it's not as
it?
jelly. It's a lot more sort
Yeah.
of firm and pasty. If I can just interrupt you for a second, Simon,
Of course.
I found a video of the games. Craig Charles versus Philip Olivier, sumo
Super, right
wrestling. Right.
then. Yes, please, please, we'll have that for us and the listeners.
Yes.
How dare you stop me in my conversation about Peck to show me a clip of Philip Olivier versus Craig Charles, two people who are not currently in his country.
I'm very sorry, Simon, but it just, I think it'll just show what I'm talking about in terms of the physical differences between them.
It's beautiful. They've got him in like their sumo wrestler nappies for no reason. Craig's house is heavily strapped up.
And it's Craig who's not charging forward so much this time. He's
Oh, his
playing
arse is out. This is awful. He won! Craig Charles did him.
Change of tactics there by Craig.
Physically,
He
you can
didn't
see
pay
there's
off.
a bit of difference between the
Cash in,
two.
no cash.
Yeah. Craig Charles looks like a sumo wrestler.
Awarded to Philippe Olivier. Have a look at this again, Sid. As you said,
It was a
Craig
good
takes his
throw
back
from Charles.
line.
Maybe he's done like some judo in his time. He's
Craig,
slinging. He's
here we go.
slinging
He
right
wants to
out.
go
Well
first
done.
part, as in the previous bout, but he
Christ.
waited and he got soft. There's
I
the
almost looked up Philip Olivier like a fucking telescope ending on that camera angle.
It's the game of
It's
sumo.
very rude, this is. We'll put the links in for this for listeners.
Back in the
Good
game of
Lord.
stone and scissors.
Anyway.
If you want to see the cast of Red Dwarf's arse, this is a good place to start. Back to the Wikipedia article,
Yes, let's do that.
I did enjoy it, though, I've got to
Sorry.
say. It was very
Apparently, that
good.
was a point to Philip Olivier, though. So, sorry.
Really? How did he win that
I don't
point?
know. I don't know how similar. Doesn't
Nah,
matter.
it's rubbish.
Anyway,
If
so.
you can win a point for that, then all bets are off in my book.
John Perry was a Peaky
Yes, I've seen
Blinders.
now John Perry. I've seen this character, Dean. I've seen him. He's in a relationship with Sarah Platt. And this week's episode, or last week's, as the point of the listeners, or maybe 2 weeks, or whatever. Recent episode, him as his brother, played by Will Mellor, they robbed one of those vans that carry the money around.
Oh, okay. So
Yeah.
they're a bad sort then.
Yeah, he's trying to go good, but his brother's real bad, Will Mellor. And he's threatened Sarah Platt's children.
Classic Mella.
Unless he did this crime, and he was going to hurt them.
What a
And of
wrong.
course, when they got there, it all went wrong, didn't it? It all went wrong.
Always does, son. Always does.
Yeah. So he's a good character. I don't like him, and I hope he doesn't carry on in it. But he's that episode was fine. I hope he goes straight to jail and never seen again.
Rowan Cunliffe.
Rowan Cunliffe. Okay, who's this then? They're played by Emrys Cooper, who sounds a bit, they could be Welsh then. We'll have a look at them in a minute. This
It's a
casting was
rack on
announced.
the
His casting was announced by Digital Spy.
links.
He hasn't even been in it yet. He is set to meet Liane Battersby and Simon Barlow at the Chariot Square Hotel when they attend an event together.
Why were they doing this? They've gone deep, haven't they? This is actually some serious research. So, that's another point for the article, I think.
Look at this next section, Dean, right? The next character is called Elsbeth. Is that how you say that?
Elspeth, that's what I would have said, yeah.
Elsbeth with a P. And it's played by Helen Lederer. Now, she made her appearance on the last episode that I watched.
Yeah.
So, but the Wikipedia article says that she is set to make her first appearance on 27th of March, which is in the past, as of recording.
Oh.
And yeah, when is it, and it did then? Happen. It happened yeah. yesterday as of recording. Yeah. So when so is this written? You were right, Dean. They're getting their news in advance here.
Yeah.
And they're filling out the Wikipedia articles, which we've never seen predictive Wikipedia articles before.
No, I don't think I have. No, I can't remember any.
These are forecasts, Dean. These are glimpses into the future. This might be the most exciting Wikipedia article we've come across.
Yeah. It's almost like a sort of very plodding live blog. It's just like a current events as they happen in real time, but close.
Yeah.
Mrs. Deering. What? Doesn't get it for first name?
Mrs. Deering is the parents of Joel Deering, who is that character from earlier on.
Is the parents.
Mrs. Deering is the parents, yeah. unless it's some kind of amalgamation, like a two-headed beast, which would be a new for Coronation Street, but they are always push the envelope.
Yeah. Or she's a fungus, just spores.
She could be
a
fungus.
Just spores, just give them off. but next entry, Mr. Deering is the parents. So they've cut and paste.
Mr. Deering is the parents, yeah.
They were going to combine these two pieces and they separated them, didn't they? They realised they had to and they didn't do enough editing. Okay, all right.
And then the final section is a box thing that says other characters. And these are like little bit parts that have appeared up since, yeah.
That's very thorough. That's very thorough indeed. I like Dr. Claire Story, the Doctor Joseph Brown, William Brown again, who has Lyme disease. that's what's one for the IMDb, isn't it?
This is good. Somebody called Joan, played by Tina Gray on the 10th of January, woman who was selling a puppy to Casey Plummer and Evelyn Plummer. Okay, great. I like this a lot.
Well, Cassie Plummer, that's Claire Sweeney, isn't it?
That's Claire Brookside? Sweeney, yeah.
From Brookside?
She's in Coronation Street now. Yeah.
Oh, see? Typecast. Once you're in the soap world, you can't get out.
Yeah. And she plays the daughter of Maureen Lipman, that horrific bat.
Okay. good to know.
Have you enjoyed looking at this Coronation Street article, Dean?
I have, actually. It's this part of the end actually sort of makes it for me. The other characters, you know, like they're not going to be recurring, but no, they've still done a job. They've all been credited.
Yeah.
You know, every actor has to start somewhere. This could count. This could help people. Like, yeah, I'm that guy from, look, I'm on Wikipedia. You can find me. And
yes.
Yeah. So do you think there is some sort of like IMDb for soap operas where they list this stuff, or has someone actually gone?
I think it's probably just on IMDb, to be honest.
Yeah, or someone like sat watching the credits and sort of...
Oh, you mean who's editing this Wikipedia article?
Yeah, the person. Do they have an
in? They're probably watching it with the credits, from pressing pause.
Which, yeah, I respect that level of thoroughness.
I really admire it, yeah. I think it's great.
Yeah. Okay. I'm very positively inclined toward this article then.
Well, give it a score for me then, Lev.
I'm going to give it 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
Because surely there's pictures of these people and there's none here.
Ah, that's right, Dean. Yes.
Pip to the post there, but yes, I'll give it 4 out of 5 with the potential for, because as we know, it's a live article.
It's a live article.
Constantly being updated. Maybe they will, maybe they do it like a quarterly thing or like a 6-monthly picture update. And go from there. But no, 4 out of 5 for the list of Coronation Street article, Coronation Street characters, 2024 article.
I'm going to give it 4.75, Dean.
Whoa, now again somewhere. Dave Decimal's going to love this.
Oh, use the theme tune for that.
Dave Decimal's. 0.7. 0.25. 0.5. That's a half. Dave Decimal's.
I really like the fact that it is predicting the future.
Hmm.
I really like that a lot. It's bending the rules, Dean.
Yeah.
You know me, I love a rule breaker.
Yeah.
I love someone who tampers with the norms, Dean.
Yeah, mavericks.
Mavericks.
Yeah, Maverickpedia.
Maverickpedia. And I'm going to forgive them that they haven't got pictures on this thing.
Mm.
Because the type of person who is editing this article and is willing to include things which hasn't happened yet, and also things about who played the doctor, who had the Lyme disease, and all this nonsense, I don't think they're going to be capable of adding pictures to the article, Dean. I think they've done incredibly well to even get the facts on there.
Yes, fair enough.
So I'm going to give them that.
Okay. I'll bump myself up to 5.25 then.
5.25? You've gone over the 5-star scale. Fucking hell.
4.25.
Listeners, abort the episode. We're going to have to rethink the whole thing. He's broken the scales.